You are about to listen to my conversation with Dr. Adam Houghton, a beloved family medicine specialist here in Bloomington, Illinois, who has received tons of great reviews online for his quality of care and plenty of words of praise also for his efforts to give care to the LGBTQ+ community. The bulk of our discussion revolves around medical practices concerning transgender people, as well as transgenderism as a whole. I apologize in advance for my clumsiness with LGBTQ+ terminology, and I assure you that I meant no disrespect by it at all. If you enjoy this show and you want to support it, sharing this video with your friends, subscribing on YouTube, and liking and following my Instagram and Facebook pages are a great way to do that. But if you would like to directly contribute to the show's improvement and its production, I would love for you to become a patron on patreon.com/PaulGarcia. I'd like to take this chance now to thank my current beloved patrons, Ben Traub, Ann Barnes, Parker Shilson, Donnie Bounds, Miranda Noyes, and Alyssa Ricketts. You guys are amazing. Today's sponsors are Marshalloni's Pizza in Fairbury, Outworn Solutions in Fairbury, Forest Edge Tree Service in Livingston County, The Coffee Steamer in Forest and Fairbury, and Fairbury Furniture in Fairbury. Now, without further ado, here is my conversation with Dr. Adam Houghton. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to the Paul Garcia Show, a show about the remarkable people of Central Illinois. I'm your host, Paul Garcia, and I invite you to join me as I speak with these individuals about their stories, the lessons they've learned, and the knowledge they've gained along the way. Tune in every Sunday to witness the power of bringing each new individual's unique journey into the spotlight. Dr. Adam Houghton, thank you so much for coming on to the show today. I appreciate it a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So you are a beloved doctor in Bloomington, Illinois. You have great ratings online. You know your stuff. I've heard nothing but great things about you. But aside from just being a doctor, well, maybe you can tell us a little more about what you do as a doctor and what are your other various responsibilities and titles, maybe?
Sure. Yeah, so I'm a family medicine doctor at Bloomington Primary Care. So we see patients of all ages, newborns, infants, adolescents, teens, adults, geriatrics. So kind of a whole wide spectrum of everything. I've been here in town for 8 years, coming up like next week, I think will be my 8-year anniversary. So it's pretty cool.
Wow.
And then I'm involved in some other areas as well. I specifically do a lot of healthcare for the LGBTQ+ community. And as of just July 1st, I'm now the medical director for a nonprofit based out of Peoria called the Central Illinois Friends. And we're opening a clinic here in town, or have already opened actually a clinic here in town at the Community Healthcare Center. So that's a new venture, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah. Holy cow. It seems like you definitely have your hands full then.
Yeah.
So, first of all, I will just let you know, you forgot two letters on the LGBTQIA.
Yeah, I know. I should keep saying the whole thing. So, a lot of times it's truncated just for whatever reason, but I'll no longer truncate it. How's that?
Okay, sounds good. I'm just messing. It's hard to keep up with all the nuanced terms and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe that sounds wrong of me. I don't know, but would you agree with that at least?
At times, yeah. And I would say, I think as long as people, myself and others included, are trying to be appropriate and say the right things, I think that's what we can ask for.
Right. Absolutely. And so within your medical practices, in the time and energy and the efforts that you have in medicine for the LGBTQIA community, who do you focus most of your attention on within that group? You know, is it the trans community? Is it the gay, bisexual, lesbian community? Where does most of your interest and efforts lie?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say I don't necessarily focus on one particular group among that kind of community. I would say a large part of what I think maybe me or my office is known for is some of the transgender care, because that's a little more unique compared to maybe some other offices. So I was the first doctor in town to provide gender-affirming hormone therapy.
Oh, wow.
Which we prescribe, and I've been doing that for a number of years. In large part, I had some patients who were traveling from here to either Chicago or St. Louis to just get access to some healthcare that otherwise wasn't available.
I'm glad you said something about the trans community. That seems to be a very interesting topic in society today. Transgenderism in general, whether it's pertaining to biology, psychology, medical practices, sport. It's a highly contested topic for sure. And you know probably better than most people, what are some of the issues or the challenges that the transgender community faces in medicine today, in America specifically?
Yeah, and I would say in medicine, a big part is just feeling comfortable accessing healthcare. And so that's something that a lot of us may take for granted. In our office, we have a sign or a little window sticker on the front that's through the Prairie Pride Coalition, so the business directory that they've had for a number of years, and different organizations across the board, whether you're an auto repair shop or a doctor's office or a retail place, can contact them to get in this business directory. You put this little window cling on the window, mostly to let anyone who comes into your facility or organization know that they're going to be treated well and appropriately. And unfortunately, in the medical community, you would think that that should be across the board. Mm-hmm. I've actually had some other people ask me, like, why is that even necessary? Don't you treat everyone appropriately and as they would want to be treated? And I would say at my office, yes, I think we do. Mm-hmm. But I've had folks who've had not good experiences at other places.
Sure.
So it's just kind of a way up front to say, hey, we're going to try as best as we can and make it clear to you before you even see anybody that we treat people equally.
So
I think that's a big issue in healthcare for the trans community, especially as they're either making transitions or before they make a transition gender-wise to feel comfortable going into a place where they know they might have to be pretty vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. So my question now is, and I don't have any, you know, narrative that I'm trying to fill here or anything,
sure.
But I am going to kind of play devil's advocate and ask, so as a doctor and being in the medical field, your primary concern and primary job is not necessarily to give the care that someone might want, but rather the care that they need for improved health in a variety of ways, psychological, mm-hmm. not spiritual, really. I mean, whatever, but yeah, physical.
Some places definitely have a spiritual aspect in healthcare.
Right. But so I can see the concern for, you said that you provide gender-affirming care, healthcare,
mm-hmm.
hormone therapy specifically.
Yeah, that's one aspect.
Do you ever turn people away, like who ask, you know, who say that I identify or I feel like I'm in the wrong body. I don't know how exactly they say it. I feel like my biological sex does not match my gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever for any reason said, and then they ask for hormone therapy or something else. Have you ever had to say, I think you should really think about this, or no, I don't think you qualify for such a drastic procedure, I guess?
Not from that standpoint. The only times, and I can only think of actually one in particular, where someone's other medical conditions made hormone therapy not an option for health reasons. So, to specify, some of the treatments that would have been provided for hormone therapy would have been counterproductive for their other health care and could actually have made them worse. So we don't want to, of course, make someone's health care worse because of the treatments we're providing.
Right. Understood completely. And I want to ask you in a second what exactly the procedures look like or what the next step would be after someone comes in, expresses their gender identity. I want to watch my words. I don't want to say their issue, their crisis or anything like that, but their gender identity thing that they're coming to you with. What was I going to say here? So I want to ask you what that procedure looks like. But before that, maybe you could explain to me what the difference is. What exactly is transgenderism? And how is it different from transsexuality? That might be a beginner question, but
yeah,
be patient with me.
Yeah, so I would say like transsexuality is a term that's just outdated. You know, we use terms like transgender, trans male, trans female. I think to answer your question, some of the terms that used to be used are the same idea that we're talking about now. We just use in a different terminology. And so the concept would be, and I guess let me take a step back too, is there's this whole spectrum of gender. So gender is not a biological construct. This is a, you know, internal sociologic kind of idea of who do I identify as. And so there are folks who are cisgender, meaning that their gender identity coincides with their gender assigned at birth. So you were born with male body parts or male hormone or male hormones along the way through adolescence, but also male chromosomes, for example, and still as an adult identify as male. There are folks who are non-binary or genderqueer, and so this is sort of not identifying on one end of the spectrum or another. And there are folks who might have been assigned one gender at birth and then along the way realize that they feel like or they are identifying as a different gender than what they were previously assigned.
You said genderqueer, and what was the other thing you said right before that?
Non-binary.
Are those roughly the same things?
I would not say the same things. And some of those areas, I don't know that I'd be as qualified to really delineate how someone might differentiate. Because a lot of this is also individualized, and the treatments are individualized when I talked about some of the hormone therapy and things. To kind of get back to your initial question, frankly, by the time someone's coming to talk with me, they've met with a number of other people in general, and that might be a counselor, a therapist, sometimes a psychiatrist, sometimes a spiritual leader. And these are struggles or issues that they may have been dealing with or grappling with for years, a wide age range as well. So I've seen, you know, young folks, pediatric and adolescents, who are starting to have these conversations. And I've seen folks who are much later in life, even retirement age, starting to have these conversations. Wow. So it's not like there's a one time where kind of the light bulb goes off and someone says, this is who I am. There's a big range of what we might expect there.
Okay.
Man, and so, okay, so yeah, so kind of going back to the other question, I certainly wouldn't turn anyone away or try to discourage someone. I'm not here to put up barriers or roadblocks to someone's identity. So I'm here, like anything in medicine, to help someone along the way to better their own health and livelihood, whether that's with their diabetes or with you know, their hormone therapy.
Okay. Okay, that's very interesting. And like I said before we started filming, I said, if I ever get anything wrong, you just feel free to crush me.
Sure, sure.
So, I mean, my genuine, not concern, so I'm genuinely curious. I've come across a good deal of stats and figures that about transgenderism in America that really are startling. And I have them right here. This isn't coming off the top of my head. I'm not that smart. I didn't memorize them all, but like, firstly, there seems to be there is a spike in people who identify as trans, and it's in high school age girls, younger girls. In recent years, there's been a spike in these young girls, and it used to a decade ago and prior to affect predominantly young boys. So there's been a changing of the guard, I guess. But female to male trans surgeries quadrupled in the U.S. from 2016 to 2017 alone, which, I mean, that should cause you to pause, I would think. And then also in the U.K., the rates of gender dysphoria, which is still recognized in the DSM, I believe, as a mental illness. Anyways, the rates of gender dysphoria for teenage girls are up 4,400% over the last decade, which is an increase of like 45 times, and 70% were young girls, whereas the decade prior, 75% were young boys. And so I guess my question is, and boy, this sounds bad, this sounds harsh, but this is my genuine thought. Is there a chance, especially in the United States, that part of this spike, I wouldn't even call it a spike because it doesn't go back down, this incredible rise, could it largely be, of course, due to society's acceptance of these people so they feel more comfortable coming out, for sure? But could it also, in perhaps large part, be, could there be some allure to identifying as trans in high school, especially when high school is celebrated, society celebrates these people, and these girls are a lot of times, you know, maybe not so popular and things like that. And, you know, they identify as trans, and then they get like a, not a parade, but, you know, they get a lot of celebration and, I don't know, acceptance maybe is a wrong word, but you know what I'm saying? Do you think that there's a possibility that that's,
I know what you're saying, and case? I would absolutely disagree with that.
Understood.
Well, think about this. You're talking about like maybe the allure, the attention someone might get short term. Mm-hmm. I would say absolutely there is a lot more acceptance now culturally than there was years ago. So I think that's in large part why we're seeing rises of these numbers, because people feel more able to be their true selves and are not going to be as hindered as they were 20, 30, 40 years ago. As far as like the quote unquote allure, I would again completely disagree with that kind of concept, in large part because still look at the whole global acceptance of trans people is still not good. Not just in America, but across the world, there's places where trans folks can't even travel because they wouldn't be safe in those locations. There's folks who are still discriminated against across the board. There's higher suicide rates. There's higher homicide rates. So it's a really difficult situation because people who come out as trans, I think much like maybe in the sometimes previous years, people who are coming out as gay or lesbian was kind of more initially accepted earlier than the trans community, in large part because maybe it wasn't as visible from the outside perspective, whereas someone who's going through hormone therapy or making other transitions can sometimes be more visible to someone who otherwise wouldn't know certain things about them, and still are very much putting themselves out there, unfortunately, to be discriminated against. So I think the long-term difficulties of coming out as trans are still there. And I do not think that anyone is saying, hey, that looks like a fun bandwagon to jump on. Understanding that it's going to make their lives more difficult from an outsider perspective, but hopefully make their lives more meaningful and more easy on themselves being their true selves.
Mm-hmm. We are brought to you by Fairbury Furniture. Fairbury Furniture is the area's favorite furniture store. Their selection is huge, their staff is helpful and friendly, and they have all of your favorite brands of mattresses, tables, chairs, recliners, couches, and basically all furniture items. So make your home comfy, stylish, and delightful when you shop at Fairbury's own Fairbury Furniture. And that all makes very good sense, certainly. My only thing is and it's hard to find funding for studies on this type of matter because it's so controversial. And those big time studies like at universities, you know, obviously, you know, they cost a lot of money and it takes significant funding, and some company's name is going to be attached to that study as being the primary funder. And so if the results are bad, you know, Johnson & Johnson or some other company that funded that is not going to want their name attached to it. But so anyways, there's not a whole lot of studies on this, but there are plenty of news articles anyways that show groups, this is very puzzling, groups of friends at high schools, almost always girls, identifying as trans together. And that's the main thing that makes me pause and be like, is that normal for what would you call it? Yeah, I hesitate to call it mental illness. Is that something, doesn't that seem abnormal to you when it comes to identifying as trans? And it's not widespread, but it's happened a number of times.
And I would say no, and I agree, I would not call it mental illness. And how is that any different than other people who have similarities becoming friends together? I was friends with other runners when I was in high school. I was friends with other kids in band.
Right.
And so folks who are trans very much may seek out others who are going through same life experiences.
But the thing is here, and this is, of course, again, these are not in-depth studies or anything, but from my understanding, these girls were friends and they never showed signs of gender identity issues or problems prior to coming out, but they were friends for a long time. And then when one identified, and now this is, so I will kind of quote Abigail Schreier. Do you know who that is? Mm-hmm. Author of a very controversial book called The Gender, what was it called? I don't have it in my notes. Irreversible Damage. It was something about exactly what I'm kind of saying, that young girls are highly susceptible to identifying as this. One of the things she was saying was, so these groups of girls would not have any signs of gender dysphoria prior to coming out. But then one girl would start transitioning. Namely, she would get hormone therapy. She would receive doses of testosterone, however those are administered, and report feelings of extremely heightened confidence, a lot less anxiety, which is very typical of receiving testosterone. There are anxiety reducing, confidence boosting agents within testosterone. And I wonder if once she received that testosterone, she reported back to her friends and said, wow, this is incredible. I knew this was who I was. But is that the truth, or is that the testosterone talking? And I mean, you have administered testosterone, so maybe you can confirm or deny.
I think that's taking a microcosm from an article and trying to bring out a bigger, not meaning, but sort of pattern, I guess, than what's actually there. And so when you mentioned gender dysphoria, when does that certainly heighten? Is during teens and adolescents. Why? Because patients or these folks' bodies are changing discongruent to their gender. So if you're a trans male and you're starting to get breasts and have a period, that's going to be very dysphoric. And so I would say it's absolutely not uncommon for people to really have heightened difficulties during that time frame because of their body puberty changes. And like I said, I don't know the article you're referencing as far as like this.
It was a New York Times article. And I think the author of this was Abigail Schreier. So not a professional study or anything. It was, it was more of an opinion article with stats. But anyways, continue on. Sorry, I kind of cut you off.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I'm not aware of that particular author either, or what if they have a certain kind of outlook they're aiming towards or whatever. But yeah.
From what I know, so Abigail Schreier was a very liberal person. She took on the topic as an investigative journalist without an opinion, but you know, that can always, it's kind of.
Sure.
But she also went to some very credible schools. She graduated from Oxford, I think Yale, and Columbia. So, I mean, she's a rare kind of journalist because she's reporting on this issue, which is, you know, a lot of journalists wouldn't touch it, but she's still very credible, I would say. She's pretty smart, is what I'm saying. But anyway.
She went to some smart schools, I guess. But
yes, right. Good point. So let's see here. What exactly does, you said that there's a heightened sense, it's no surprise, basically, that a lot of people identify as trans when they're teens, maybe post-puberty. Do you think that most people who do eventually identify as trans, as being the other gender, do their ideas of, does that notion that they are the wrong sex or that they are a male living in a female body, when does that start? Do you have any idea?
And like I said, that's definitely individualized for everybody. Mm-hmm. So I know folks who started to have those concepts when they were pre-adolescence, and then others who came to that realization later in life. So it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of experience.
Hmm. Are there any factors, environmental factors, that you think that could contribute to developing that mindset that you are trans? Is that maybe the wrong question to ask?
Either? Yeah, I know how I'd answer that. I mean, environmental factors affect everything in our lives, so I'm sure there are some things that would coincide as well, but not like a cause and effect sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the, I do genuinely have a lot of care and sympathy for this community, namely because the suicide rates are so stinking high. Right. And more often than not, they do also report having depression. What do you think? Why is that? Do you think it's purely because of
society's lack of acceptance. Maybe you can shed some light on why exactly they are so distraught a lot of the time.
And I would say not only society's, but their own. So like anyone who is going through difficult times, whether it's gender identity or anything else in their lives, it can be really difficult to sometimes accept who you are. And so I think society plays a role in that, as do families of origin. So I have patients, for example, who didn't come out until they were an adult because they were not going to be supported when they were younger. I've had patients that family members cut ties and basically boot them out because of this, which is awful and terrible. And so there's no reason to think that there wouldn't be higher rates of depression, anxiety. And in fact, I've had kind of the opposite improvement after acceptance and hormone therapy. I've had patients get off medications for the anxiety, depression. I've had patients be so much more productive in their personal and you know, public lives and work lives because they're finally being able to be themselves. And they often are able to find a community that accepts them for who they are and doesn't try to put them in a box or pigeonhole them or, you know, make assumptions otherwise.
Undoubtedly, a large part of their renewed sense of happiness, their lowered levels of depression, is definitely because of society and their self's acceptance of who they are. Do you think, though, that any part of that, I mean, you know how testosterone works, it is a large part of that, maybe a small part of that?
It's not just testosterone, it's also estrogen, so the opposite kind of hormone when we're talking about trans women, as well as patients who, like I said, are more gender non-binary. So I have folks that we have either on hormone therapy at lower levels or choose not to proceed with hormone therapy and have other kind of social therapies, whether it's using different names and pronouns, dressing differently, wearing hair differently. And often that in and of itself without hormone therapy helps them live a better life because that's who they are. And so it's not, you know, some medication we're giving them that's like causing these effects.
Right. It is just finally becoming who you've always felt like you were in the flesh, you know, outwardly expressing who you are on the inside as far as you're concerned, right?
Yeah, and I think sometimes people get hung up on like the hormone aspect.
I think that's me, I think, honestly.
I would say also like keep in mind, who else do we provide hormone therapy for? Lots of other people. So I have a lot of cisgender men who we prescribe hormone therapy for who have low testosterone. I have other women going through menopause or perimenopause that we're prescribing bioidentical hormones or estrogens and progesterones to help regulate those kind of hormone disparities during that time in their life. And there's other folks who certainly use these medications inappropriately for performance enhancement and you know, things like this. And that's kind of a whole nother realm. And I would say very different than what we're talking about with kind of gender transitioning.
Right. Absolutely. Although I am tempted to ask you about your thoughts on the sports world.
We are brought to you by Outworn Solutions in Fairbury, Illinois. We've all been there. You're trying to repair something small or large, only to end up needing a small, little, annoying part that is specific to the thing that you're repairing. But you don't know what the heck the name of the part is, and you can't find it online for a reasonable price, so you start pulling your hair out and you throw the whole project in the trash. It happens to all of us. This is precisely where the truly incredible services of Outworn Solutions in Fairbury, Illinois, come to save the day. Outworn Solutions is a 3D printing service that can create any and all of those strong or bendy small to medium parts that you need to repair your hot rod, your golf cart, your coffee machine, your action figures, your refrigerator even, literally almost anything. So don't search for ridiculously marked up replacement parts online or in stores. Instead, call John at Outworn Solutions because he can create the part you need, likely stronger, and for a much better price. For the solution to all of your outworn parts, visit Outworn Solutions at 1005 West Oak Street in Fairbury, Illinois, aka the old bowling alley, or give them a call at 815-674-9319. That's Outworn Solutions, the solution to all of your outworn parts.
Would you mind if I did that? I know it's sure. A little off topic, but okay. What do you think as far as, I do believe, forgive me for my lack of, like, I don't know the terms all that well, but I believe a trans woman is a woman now who was formerly a male.
I just blanked on the term I was going to use.
Oh,
assigned male
trouble.
At birth. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, got it. So, so what do you think about males who, trans women who go through who transition into women, but still have the muscle mass that they've gained from being a man, which is, you know, different than biological women, who are stronger, quicker, you know, as far as physicality goes, they're better athletes all around. Then identifying as women, especially at the high school level, maybe going through some hormone therapy and things as well, and then competing with women and stomping them. I mean, it's undeniable that this happens, but what do you think about all that? Do you have a formed opinion?
I would say at any level, trans men and trans women should be able to compete in sports and be able to have experience that their peers have. Mm-hmm. And same thing with, again, I think people get hung up on the hormone therapy. I think people get very hung up on the whole sports realm. And I don't know how to, you know, sway opinions, but there's plenty of trans men and women who don't participate in sports. There's plenty that do. There's plenty that, you know, are average in their own sport. There's some that might excel. And as far as at any level, and even I know there's, you know, people that get more worked up about not only high school, but later stages, college and professional athletes, I think because at that point, then there's concern about the financial gains and this sort of stuff.
Right.
But those sort of areas have their own criteria that these people are still meeting that criteria. So if you're a Olympic athlete, you have to still meet the criteria, I guess, to perform as an Olympic athlete. There are cisgendered women, so women who identify as women and who are assigned to women at birth, that have high testosterone levels, and those mm-hmm. people have to still keep their testosterone levels within a certain range to be able to compete.
Right. I remember seeing, like, I think a Jamaican sprinter who was a cisgender woman who was like right on the edge. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting. And yeah. But yeah.
And at the same time, there are folks who are intersex, which is kind of chromosomal differences that are not male or female or intersex. And so that's, I think, also an area that people should be able to compete in sports. Frankly, mm-hmm. whether someone who is cisgendered or transgendered does well in sports, does that really affect the people who are up in arms about it? Is my other concept is I want people to be happy in themselves and be able to do whatever activity they want to do. And I think that's fine. And if some kid does well in sports, that doesn't affect me. Why do I get so bent up about it? I don't know.
Right. Understood. I really do understand that. And the kids' mental health, their happiness, that does come first. You know, people take sports very seriously, for sure. People really want to win. Parents want their kids to win more than the kids want to win sometimes. And yeah, there's definitely a culture of sports parents and sports people who are, I mean, they get heated about this thing. The only thing is, though, like you said, when finances come into it, like if you win the state title, you might get in wrestling as a girl, you might get a full ride to you might get a full ride to a women's wrestling team that's Division I or something like that. And then, yeah, you know,
that's great. You should get your full ride.
Right. But I mean, but then as if a trans woman beats her, you can at least acknowledge, right, how people would be upset, but do you think it just takes a little further consideration?
I can understand maturity? Why people would be upset, but I would say that trans woman still deserves her full scholarship. They are competing in the sport that they're competing with.
When did you become especially interested in this topic? How did you grow up? Did you grow up in a family that was adamant on supporting this community and people?
I would say, I grew up in a small town, 3,000 people thereabouts, and I had virtually no experience in this area until, I don't think I really personally knew anyone who was gay until maybe college. And so certainly it wasn't something that I guess just was ever really discussed or talked about. I grew up in the 80s in a small central Illinois town, which I think a lot of our surrounding areas is fairly conservative. We happen to live now in a college town that has, I think, some more progressive kind of ideas than maybe some of the other areas around here. But yeah, it was not something that I really started to actively work, I guess, consciously pursue till I was here in Bloomington. Like I said, when I had some patients who were having to travel hours out of town to kind of get the healthcare they needed, and my initial thought was, well, that's stupid. We can do that here. From a medical standpoint, it's no different than prescribing a 50-year-old dude who has low testosterone. And then there's the whole kind of social-emotional aspect, which we can help with too, with having folks meet with counselors or therapists and, providing those other avenues of support. So yeah, there wasn't some inciting event that I said, this is something I need to champion or whatever. It was just something that as a healthcare provider, trying to provide the best healthcare I can to my patients, that was an area that I think was lacking in our community.
And it's very obvious that you have genuine care for your patients. And that seems to be what people say online all the time, that you really care. You put the time in, you're willing to stay late if you need to and just really explain things to them, connect with them, understand them. And that's wonderful. And I really do care about the trans community. I do. And as controversial as it sounds, I wonder what the best solution is for them. How do I say this? Do you think that hormone therapy, I don't know if there's other ways of transitioning, like first steps, is that always the best way to go if someone is experiencing a gender identity crisis, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, it is a way to go. I don't know that there's a best way, because again, everything's individualized. So there's some great organizations. There's an organization called WPATH, which has this handbook, I guess you may want to call it, or kind of procedures. It's called the Standards of Care. So you can Google search this. It's a, 85-page document you can find for free. And it very much delineates research-based kind of steps as far as treating trans patients specifically. And so, and they have some terminology. It also isn't my favorite terminology, but they talk about different completely reversible, partially reversible, and irreversible treatments. And that doesn't mean we think people are going to change their minds. But the idea is if someone were to start a certain treatment and have to stop for some reason, hormone therapy, for example, I've had some folks that had to pause that because of financial reasons or moving or other health reasons or whatever, what might one expect? So the completely reversible side of things would be kind of what we discussed, using different name and pronouns, dressing differently, wearing hair differently, wearing makeup differently, things like this. The partially reversible aspect is in hormone therapy. So if you were to start hormone therapy, you would experience certain benefits along the way. And then if you had to stop for some reason, some of that might backslide a bit, but not back to like before someone started the medication. And so that's considered quote unquote partially reversible. And then the irreversible treatments would then be different surgical procedures.
Right. Extremely interesting.
And so I have patients, for example, who have a wide variety of different kind of things that they proceed with, whether it's only the social transitioning, whether it's also including hormone therapy, whether it's also including surgical treatments.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so to answer your question, I guess go for full circles. There's not one thing that I would say is best for somebody. It's where we have this conversation like we do with any healthcare question or thing that we're working on is, you know, here's the different options and here's the risks and benefits and alternatives. And where do we go from here? So what's the next best step for that individual person?
We are brought to you by Forest Edge Tree Service. If you have trees or tree stumps on your property that you want gone, go nowhere else but Livingston County's premier tree service provider, Forest Edge Tree Service. Your yard is no place for looming, dead, or damaged trees because it's just a matter of time before they come down, ruining your property, ruining your week, and ruining your bank account. This is exactly why you need to be a responsible adult and hire the services of Forest Edge Tree Service. Simply give Joe Rudin a call or text at 815-615-3037 to get a free quote today. Keep your family, pets, vehicles, and neighbors safe and save yourself from a world of headaches when you call or text Forest Edge Tree Service to get those dangerous, looming, troublesome trees off of your property. That's Forest Edge Tree Service, Livingston County's premier tree service provider.
Do people, in your experience anyways, do they ever detransition if they go through the
process? I have never come across that.
Okay, so you would say it's probably exceedingly rare.
From my experience, I would say so. I don't know any kind of numbers as far as that goes, right. But I've never had anyone who has transitioned and then realized that that was not what they wanted to do or something.
Yeah, and I mean, I couldn't find any studies on it either. Granted, as we discussed, it is a relatively new, not new, but it's come onto the scene a lot more in recent years. So there hasn't been a lot of time or reason to conduct, big time studies.
Yeah. And I would agree with you. It's certainly not new, but it's more recognized. Right. So hundreds of years ago, there are people who are trans and it just wasn't something that was more maybe recognized, or there was not a name for it, or there's not as acceptable. And so a lot of times, yeah, I think things are better now than they've ever been, but there's still a long way to go before, everyone can be themselves.
Mm-hmm. Just a little anecdote here. When I was a kid, I remember I wanted to play with my sister's dolls. I remember wanting to do that so bad. And my dad was like, nah, you're not going to play with dolls. And I have friends that have similar stories that are men now. And, they wanted to do that type of stuff. I remember wearing my sister's high heels, and my dad was like, or my mom and dad were like, hey, take those off. What are you doing? You're a boy, At the same time, I'm thankful they did that because I have, I personally have no gender identity things going on.
I would say, why are you thankful they did that? What's wearing heels have to do with being a male or female?
I
would say absolutely nothing.
I truly wonder if my parents had been very modern and very much into this scene, of pro, you want to be extra sensitive to if their kid might be transgender. They might have said like, oh, let him wear this. Maybe let him wear a dress. Let him do this and that. And then, maybe I'd be like, maybe I'm a girl. But I mean, I'm not as far as my brain is concerned.
You think if you played with Barbies as a kid, that's going to make you a girl?
Kids are very malleable. It won't make me a girl, but it might make me consider, if I grew up today, might make me consider like, hey, there's a lot of trans people out there. I think I might fit that bill. Do you think there's any possibility to that?
I think if that's who you were and those around you gave you an opportunity to explore your own gender identity, certainly that's not a bad thing. And I don't think that would have swayed someone one way or another. This is not something that you can force on somebody.
Right. How can we know though?
Well, I would say the opposite. Are there people who are quelling their loved one's own personal gender identity by doing things like making things so masculine or so feminine? I mean, there's this whole, concept of toxic masculinity. I can't go to, the grocery store and buy whatever deodorant I want. It's got to have, the dragon on the front, which I'm a sucker for that kind of marketing just because I like it. But at the same time, there's people that won't use facial scrubs or, you know, certain, you know, soaps or something because that's a flowery scent and I'm a man and I shouldn't wear that or use that. Mm-hmm. I think that's stupid. So I would say, why is playing with G.I. Joes a boy thing and playing with Barbies a girl thing? Why is, you know, wearing your hair short traditionally a boy thing, but wearing it long is a girl thing? I know men with long hair and I know women with short hair. Mm-hmm. Why? What's the problem with wearing heels if you're a man or a woman? How does that at any way determine your like gender? It doesn't. You know, our society has taught us that, hey, you shouldn't wear that because boys don't wear that. But I don't understand like why that's a thing.
Right.
And some of the things that we do now is flipped from where it used to be. So men back in the day were wearing like powdered wigs and like flowery.
Right.
Perfume.
High heels were originally worn by male butchers to stay like, off the blood.
There you go. Know? That's a thing. That was a appropriate, like, you know, attire for like what was needed for their work. So I don't know. Why is it? Why do things have to be so differentiated?
Right. Rigid social constructs regarding gender and how men and women should act. Yeah. It's a large part of that very much is a social construct. I think that typical female behavior, let's see here. A large amount of stuff is a social construct. I mean, we made up that women should sit with their legs, you know, closer together, whereas men spread them. We didn't really teach men to spread them, but, you know, that's a social construct that women have long hair, that women wear dresses and things, social constructs. But I do believe on a biological level, women are going to be more prone to caring for others. I mean, by and large, women are better at caring and are, you know, speak with people a lot, are better with people. That's why they occupy certain occupations like nurses and caretakers and things. It might be a partial social construct as well. But whereas biologically, I think men are more apt to be an engineer, tinker with things rather than people. And you know, these are things that I hear from professors at big universities and things like, I don't know, I think a lot of social constructs are just that, social constructs, but a lot of them might largely be biological, like the typical female interests or female is going to be interested in this thing because of their biology.
I think like anything, there's a wide variety. So I don't think there's, a certain area that women should or are more drawn to than men. I disagree, I guess.
Understood. Respectfully disagree. Very respectfully disagreeing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's stuff. I just take by like my personal experience. There's a lot of things that I don't have any inkling to do that are traditionally masculine. Like I don't want to go hunt. I never did that as a kid, but has no interest to me. Sports, I ran in college and high school and stuff, but like I don't watch sports ever. It's not my thing. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I'd much rather go to a theater and watch a play and a musical. Like that's what I like.
I feel like we can relate, at least in that way. The only sport I enjoy watching really, and I like some Olympic stuff like the gymnastics, it's, and everything. Yeah, it's very interesting. I love wrestling as well, which I guess is pretty masculine. But I mean, I love classical music. I love theater. I think it's beautiful. I love reading. I mean, yeah, I don't know. And I guess a lot of people would say I'm feminine in a lot of ways and masculine in other ways. And I don't care.
Like, you know? Everybody is, So, and kind of go back to what we talked about a little bit earlier. I know people that I think wouldn't even entertain the idea of going to see a classical symphony because
it's not manly.
It's not manly, or it's just not something I would like pathetic. Making a decision before you even go, like, I'm not going to enjoy this, so I'm just not going to do it. Because I've watched, games and get into it. And, when the Cubs won the World Series, some of my family members are, big Cubs fans and stuff. So I like turned it on the last inning or the over, were they in the ninth inning? I don't know.
I want to say it was
extra innings, seven, right?
Something like that. I was on my way to Chicago. Yeah. I was like your family, I think, on my way to Chicago mid-game because we were so sure they were going to win and got a rain delay. But that's besides the point.
Well, like I watch into the game and I'm like sweating, my heart's racing. Yeah. I'm like, they're going to screw it up. And then I thought, they could win or lose, and I would have absolutely no, you know, really care in the world. But like, mm-hmm. as I'm watching it, getting into it, then I could feel myself like, you know, getting worked up. So I can't imagine what the true fans were like.
Right. Oh,
so
yeah.
there's an example of like, I don't really care about sports or watch that many sports. Mm-hmm. And if I watched them, I can get into them, but you know, still not my thing.
We are brought to you by Marshalloni's Pizza in Fairbury, Illinois. Incredibly scientific studies show that when you ask someone what their favorite food is, there's a 92% chance they will say it is pizza. However, the only reason that's not 100% of the time is because some people have never had pizza from Marshalloni's Pizza in Fairbury, Illinois. Marshalloni's Pizza in Fairbury, Illinois has savory sauces, creamy cheeses, and a variety of delicious toppings. For my birthday this year, instead of cake, I had barbecue chicken pizza from Marshalloni's, and it was the best birthday ever. Marshalloni's also offers a daily happy hour, so if you call between 4 and 5 p.m. and order a pizza, you get the second one of equal or lesser value for free. Restrictions apply. You can even call at 4:45 p.m., order the pizzas, pick them up at 8 p.m., and you will still get the happy hour discount. So for the most delicious pizzas around, head nowhere else but Marshalloni's Pizza in Fairbury, Illinois. Call them up and place your order today at 815-692-4602 and pick them up at 405 East Locust Street in Fairbury. That's Marshalloni's Pizza in Fairbury, Illinois.
Something I really wanted to ask you about that I've somehow not asked yet is when it comes, because some very young kids can identify as trans and seek the proper therapy, I guess, like hormone therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a cutoff for, will you not go, kids before puberty who have not hit puberty yet, would you hesitate to give them hormone therapy? Because, yeah, so, I mean, they're still very young. They don't know.
Yeah, so it's kind of a different thing. So most of the time, hormone therapy doesn't start before someone's 16.
Okay.
But okay, before someone hits puberty, there's a whole nother realm that we didn't really talk about yet, with, puberty blockers. So it's an implant you put inside the arm that just pauses puberty. And so
that sounds very extreme.
It's actually not, because it's 100% reversible. So that gives.
What? Yeah, so like, I was supposed to hit puberty at 12.
Yep.
And then 14 years, you pause it effectively. Yep,
you effectively pause it. And then that gives, those kids and their families time to meet with specialists and other healthcare personnel to kind of figure out what's the next steps. And so generally the idea would be you would pause that puberty, and then at around 16, if the decision was to proceed with hormone therapy, you would just start on that hormone therapy. If the decision was to not do that, that implant could be removed and puberty would proceed as it otherwise would have, just at a later date.
That sounds overly simple for a very complex
very appropriate, because then those folks aren't going through the vast dysphoria and the difficulty later in life where those kind of patients wouldn't need surgery. So for example, top surgery is the most typical surgery that I have folks go through, which is essentially think of a mastectomy or breast reconstruction.
Oh, right. Yeah.
For trans men. And so if you were to pause puberty before they developed breasts and then started the hormone therapy, then their chest contour would look like every other boy in their kind of ages. That's actually a way to prevent, you know, future surgeries and some of the dysphoria going along during that difficult time of adolescence when they're having other body changes that are discongruent.
Right, right. And do you think that there's any chance that, first of all, are the puberty blockers safe? Are they safe?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Like, and those are, I will say also, those are traditionally or typically done in large not large settings, but there's no one in our area that does the puberty blockers. That's not something that
I do
at my office. That really needs like a multi-specialty approach. Mm. So there's pediatric endocrinologists and psychiatrists and other specialists. So it's not like something that's done commonly outside of those like more settings where that's kind of what they do.
Okay.
So I've had folks from our area, for example, go basically up to Chicago. There's a place called Lurie Children's Hospital that do tons of other things as well, but this happens to be one one area that they work with as well.
Okay. Okay. And so effectively, these puberty blockers just buy you some time to give exactly. further consideration.
Yeah. And a lot of times that's really for the families as well, because that gives parents time to kind of, come to grips with their child's gendered identity.
So when it comes to very young pre-puberty, is that pre-adolescent? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay. Pre-adolescents, when they come to you saying that they are trans, you'll more often than not encourage them to take puberty blockers before making any permanent decisions or any big time decisions?
I would make the referral for them to talk with those folks about that.
Okay.
So I think that's always appropriate to have a further conversation. And it's not as common that I see folks that young of an age in my setting. So more typically for children that I see tend to be 13, 14, 15 and above. But I've seen folks younger than that. And then that's where we're helping them get established with one of these other specialty centers to really help with that.
Do you know how exactly do these puberty blockers work? I know you didn't design them or anything. I don't know how much you know about them. I'm sure it's a very complicated thing that it does.
Yeah, I don't know specifically, since it's not something I prescribe. Hystrelin is the one I'm most familiar with, which is the implant. But
okay. And it just...
I don't recall off the top of my head the mechanism.
Right. It's got to be complicated. It's got to like restrict the release of a certain hormone that onsets puberty, I guess, from a gland. I have absolutely no idea. These are wild guesses, but Okay. And really, there's no negative side effects. The only effect is delayed puberty.
Delayed puberty.
Wow. That's incredible. And okay, while I really appreciate the conversation with you, and it's you handle it very well. You're speaking very well about it, eloquently, you're articulate about it, and it makes sense. But what do you think? Like, obviously, you know, there's a large community that's, when they're watching this, they might be very angry at their screen right now, because they think that to treat young people and go proceed with procedures and transition therapy and stuff. I'm terrible with my words today, but you know, hormone therapy, even surgery with young people, they'll think that's reckless. They'll think it's
careless. Surgery's not done. There's no one doing surgeries under the age of 18. So that's really something that's an adult kind of procedure. The puberty blockers, like I said, are completely reversible and gives families and patients more time to really dig into, is this a long-term kind of identity or is this something that's not long-term? And, then the hormone replacement, like I said, generally isn't until someone's toward the end of their adolescence as well. So all of this is something that's not a spur of the moment, quick decision. So people are talking about these kind of decisions for years. This is again, not like I woke up today and realized I want to do this and tomorrow we started. It's a process, especially for kids and with kids. Most places, and this is what I do as well, there's like anything that we talk about, I mentioned kind of risks and benefits and alternatives, a whole kind of informed consent is the terminology there, which isn't a piece of paper. It's a conversation you have. But in this instance, there is a kind of a long form that we go through and both parents and guardians, you know, initial and sign it and stuff. Before we're starting like hormone therapy for anyone under the age of 18.
Is that's required in Illinois?
It's not required that I'm aware of, but something that I recommend.
Okay.
And also, that's where it gets a little bit more complicated for anyone under 18, because as a minor, their healthcare is under their parents or guardians. And so you can imagine in any setting, this is especially... if like one parent's on board and one's not, that could be a very complicated scenario. So unfortunately, there are folks who, if one parent or guardian is very adamant against some of these different treatments, then those treatments generally wait until they're an legal adult to be able to make those decisions for themselves.
Now, in some states, a very select few, correct me if I'm wrong, an adolescent, someone under 18 can go to the doctors and get hormone therapy, right? Without their parents' permission, I should add that part.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are specific healthcare things that can be provided without parental permission, involving things like pregnancy and STI, treatments and things like this. As far as, from a legal standpoint, I don't know what certain states' requirements are. I would say, that's kind of a murky area legally, because I don't know, again, what some other state laws are or something.
We are brought to you by the Coffee Steamer. The Coffee Steamer is Livingston County's premier coffee joint. Their trailer in Fairbury boasts delicious and decadent coffee drinks, teas, and smoothies, while their full-service cafe in Forest has all that, plus tons of incredible baked goods, sandwiches, and salads. Life is too short to drink bad coffee, so head on over to the Coffee Steamer and start your mornings or your afternoons off right.
And, we're getting towards the end of this conversation. I'll go ahead and end this on a few lighter notes. How do people react typically, the patients that you've had, to themselves, I guess, to the situation post, maybe not surgery? I doubt you've dealt with too many surgeries, right? But more so hormone
I don't
therapy.
Perform those surgeries, but I've of had course. A number of folks who have had surgical treatments.
And reported back to you after them and stuff?
Yep.
What's the reaction after this? Like, how do they feel? How do they report feeling before and after these procedures?
Yeah, after, I would say overwhelmingly positive.
Overwhelmingly.
Yeah. I've had no one that I can think of. I've had no one that I've seen after hormone therapy or even after surgeries that regretted those decisions or that had concerns. So, as I mentioned, my experience has been very positive, very thankful. I've had folks tell me their lives were saved because of these treatments. Mm-hmm. You mentioned like the high suicide rates, drastically can be reduced. We can reduce anxiety and depression. I've gotten people off other medications for those kind of conditions after they get on other hormone therapies. So it's just a tremendous success in my experience.
And one thing that I've noticed, like 3 years ago when I was looking up this topic, there seemed to be no effect on suicidality, the likelihood that a trans person would commit suicide before their surgery, or before the transitioning and after. And also, there was no difference in rural areas where they're not very socially accepted. And in places like even LA, there was really no difference in suicidality. But one study that I just found this morning, actually, did show that there was like an 8% decrease in suicide rates in people that have gone through a transition, have transitioned, be it through hormone therapy or surgery. So it does seem like in part a beneficial thing for one's mental health if they are in fact trans.
I would agree.
And last thing here, what do you think the future of medicine looks like for trans people? Because I know it's a little difficult for them right now, or at least it's difficult for them. Are you hopeful? What do you think it looks like, and what do you want to see more of in the future of medicine?
Yeah. So I think I'm hopeful. At the beginning, I kind of mentioned that I'm the medical director for the Central Illinois Friends, which I didn't, I guess, really talk about what that is. So they started in the 90s really as a HIV screening and treatment prevention organization. So,
and in the 90s, it was thought that that was like purely in the homosexual community, right?
Correct. Yeah. And in large part, that's why this organization was started, because people, whether they were homosexual or not, had no access to care and were treated very poorly. And so, there was someone that said, hey, we need to help this group of people. And so over the time, that's sort of morphed into also including other STI, sexually transmitted infection screening. They do some free vaccinations. They provide what's called PrEP, which is something I prescribe as well. It's pre-exposure prophylaxis. So if someone is at high risk, either because they're having multiple partners or has a partner with HIV, you can take a medication to prevent transmission. There's post-exposure prophylaxis, so same idea, but after the fact, if you had a high-risk contact, you can take medication to help prevent transmission of the virus.
Could I ask you one question about that?
Yeah.
So I see these commercials for these, I believe they're HIV medications. I don't know if they're you know, they eliminate it. I doubt it, because I don't think there's a cure for HIV, which is AIDS. But they're always like, you know, the forgive me again. Like, the, it seems like they're the cross dressers in the what's drag queens in these like commercials. In the commercial. Yeah, and there's like, you know, the same sex partners like crazy. So does HIV affect, by and large, the majority of people with HIV? Are they gay or a member of the LGBTQIA community?
Can affect everyone. So the high rates in other countries, for example, and a lot of that is also transmitted through birth. So if a mother is HIV positive, they can transmit to their child.
And the child had, of course, no sexual relations of any kind. So it's not just sexually transmitted.
Yeah. And I'll step back too and say that HIV and AIDS are two separate things. HIV is the virus. AIDS is the immunodeficiency syndrome from the virus. So they're not an interchangeable term. Because you can have HIV but not have AIDS. You can also be undetectable. So if I had the HIV virus and I take medication to get my viral load and levels down to what's called undetectable. So if you do a blood test, it would be a negative or undetectable. That also then means that HIV virus is untransmissible. So there are people that can live now long term with HIV if it's treated appropriately, that don't then develop AIDS, which is more high risk with other kind of co-infections and stuff. So that's how a lot of people die with AIDS, is from other infections that otherwise their body could take care of, but now they can't because their immune system is sort of trashed because of this virus.
I know Magic Johnson or something has HIV or AIDS, I think, right? Or is it just HIV?
I believe now he's, I don't know offhand, but I imagine he's undetectable, last I heard. So then he has HIV, but I don't know that you would say he has AIDS because he doesn't have the immunodeficiency issues because his viral load would be so low.
Oh, okay. And didn't someone like buy the rights to the AIDS medication and skyrocket the price or something like 300 times?
I don't know about that one.
I'll edit that part out if that's total nonsense.
But there's some people that have done that with medications. I don't know that was the case with, there's a couple, you know, some out now, but.
Okay. Anyways, you're talking about that group.
Yeah, I don't remember what. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So in the 90s.
Yeah. So now, like I mentioned, they have a clinic based out of Peoria, but now we've opened one in Normal at the community healthcare center. And so they currently are doing all those procedures and protocols I talked about with the testing and getting people hooked up with other specialists and stuff when they need that. But the concept there, or the potential long-term you know, goal, could be to grow that clinic even further, and then perhaps eventually, you know, include trans healthcare and other things that we've kind of discussed already. So that's one way that I think I see, you know, benefits for these communities moving forward, is just more access to care, even in areas where previously that was lacking.
Right. At the end of the day, what's your number one goal just in this profession as a doctor? You obviously care a lot. What's maybe your goal in doing all this, if that makes sense?
Yeah. So I would say to provide excellent healthcare to people, make their lives better, and not harm people. So just give them better health and life and wellness and happiness.
Wonderful. All right. Dr. Adam Houghton, thank you so much for coming on. This was a great conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
It was great to have differing opinions on things, and I really appreciate the conversation. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
And that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening to that episode of The Paul Garcia Show. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it on Facebook or with your friends. And if you haven't already, like this page on Facebook and subscribe on YouTube. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave this show a 5-star rating and an honest review. If you'd like to support The Paul Garcia Show, you can do so by donating any dollar amount on Venmo to The Paul Garcia Show. Additionally, if you'd like to become a monthly donor and gain access to exclusive bonus footage, you can do so on patreon.com/Paul Garcia. Until next Sunday, thanks for listening and watching. I'm Paul Garcia. God bless and have a great week.